privacy legislation. Oh, sorry, we're recording this webinar. So today we're going to talk about, you know, if you've been paying attention to the news at all, you know that so far in the US, lawmakers have really had a difficult time agreeing on what a data privacy law should look like. When Europe passed its sweeping privacy law back in 2018, there was a little bit of pressure, I think, on the US government to create a federal law so that we could have standards similar to that of the EU so that we can continue to export data out of the EU and into the US. However, it wasn't quite enough to get us there. And so we continue to sort of fight that battle in the US House and Senate. But in the meantime, US states have decided that they're not going to wait around. And that is evident by the fact that California, Virginia, and Colorado have all enacted their own privacy laws. And there are dozens more waiting in state legislature committees across the country. So my name is Angelique Carson. I am director of content here at Osano. We are a privacy software company and we help companies comply with privacy laws around the world. In my past life, I was a privacy journalist. So I spent a lot of time here in Washington, DC on Capitol Hill, watching lawmakers have some of those disagreements about what we should do about privacy at a federal level. So as I mentioned, we're going to dig deep into what's going on at the state level today and how that may lead to progress or not at the federal level. And before I go any further, I want our esteemed panelists to get the chance to introduce themselves. So maybe we'll start with Alex. If you could just begin, Alex, with the hospital you were born at and then just move on from there. No, I'm just kidding. Just give us a little synopsis of who you are and why you're here with us today.
Thank you, Angelique. I'm so excited to be here. And it's great to see everybody interested in geeking out about the same things that I like to geek out about. I will say that I was born at Pennsylvania Hospital in Philadelphia, even though I have not been, I don't live in Philadelphia anymore, but I'm a big Phillies fan. And I've been at Politico for a little over 2.5 years. I just moved earlier this year to start covering privacy full-time. But prior to that, I covered privacy for my entire time, more in bits and pieces when I was the writer of our daily newsletter, which is called Morning Tech. So I hope that many of you have seen Morning Tech or are fans of Morning Tech. And I'm looking forward to diving more into the discussion about state federal tug of war.
And before Politico, you were at the New York Times?
Before Politico, I was at the New York Times. I was covering local New York City news.
Awesome. And are you based in New York, Alex?
I'm actually based in Los Angeles right now, but currently, okay. right now I'm in New York.
Perfect. Okay, David, a little on yourself, if you would.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, everybody. I'm Dave Stallis. I'm not sure if I'm in the right panel because Angelique said this was esteemed guest. That's why I must be in the wrong place, but I guess you're stuck with me. I was actually born in Voorhees, New Jersey, a hospital in Voorhees, New Jersey, which is right across the river from where Alex was born, strangely enough. It makes me a Phillies fan as well. But I live in Denver now and I have for the past 12, 13 years out in Denver. I'm a lawyer, sorry to report. And I head up my firm, Hush Blackwell's privacy and cybersecurity practice. And I think for those of you, probably a number of you know that we do a lot in this area of state privacy legislation, tracking the legislation, putting out podcasts with state lawmakers, all those types of things. So happy to talk with you about this topic. Obviously, we're passionate about it.
Excellent. Thank you. And so, you know, the reason that I invited these two panelists on today, besides the fact that they're brilliant and fun to talk to, is David has really significant expertise on the state level. He, you know, is advising clients on how to comply with some of these emerging laws and existing laws. And Alex has a really good grip on the states as well, but especially on the broader federal level. So I think they're going to sort of complement each other in the knowledge they're going to bring to this. At the end, we will save a little bit of time for some Q&A. So if you have questions, feel free to enter them into the queue. I think it's better if we do it at the end, just so we can keep the conversation flowing, if you don't mind, but feel free to type in the questions as you think of them. And I will try and get to as many of them as possible, depending on how many we have at the end. Alex, let's start with you. Can you just give us sort of a high level overview of what you've noticed in your time reporting on privacy, especially, you know, statewide?
Yeah. So I think it's a really interesting time for privacy because unlike so many of the other issues that we are seeing play out on the Hill and across Washington, both also federal level and in state legislatures, privacy is actually one area where there is a ton of bipartisan agreement and momentum to get something done. It's not There are, of course, you know, partisan sticking points that have led to the holdup, especially in Congress. But by and large, there is a lot more consensus across the political spectrum on privacy and the fact that laws addressing our privacy and data like need to exist than there are on so many other tech policy issues. So I guess the longstanding enthusiasm to pass privacy at the state and federal level, since I've been covering privacy over the last 2+ years, it's only increased. So there have been, in my view, so many should be inflection points that have really underscored why these laws are needed. I mean, there are data breaches happening so regularly that probably almost everyone in the country at this point has been affected by them. The invalidation of Privacy Shield last year, the EU-US Privacy Shield framework, and now negotiations and talks around that for the new successor framework are ongoing, but I think that was another inflection point. Also last year, we saw how the protests over racial injustice and the murder of George Floyd by police, how that moved civil rights much more front and center in debates about privacy, surveillance, AI, facial recognition. That was a big inflection point. And then I think every time we see one of these big, large, very powerful companies, for example, Apple, Facebook, coming out with their own rules of the road on privacy and their own privacy updates, launching new privacy-centric features, I think those are all inflection points. And depending on how you look at them, it's, you know, either move to like lean into privacy because they know that regulation could be coming, or to self-regulate in the absence of any action from lawmakers. I think those are all inflection points. And then lastly, I would just say that I think every time there's another foreign country that puts in place its own privacy framework, even adversaries like China, even though there's lots of questions about that law. But every time we see a foreign country put their own law in place, that's also an inflection point. And then last, I know I said that there was another last one, but the last one is that with COVID, everything is a data concern, and data concerns have been magnified. There's all these companies, you know, getting into vaccine passports, and earlier in COVID, the, you know, contact tracing. And so anyways, all of these things have really magnified how important it is to have privacy legislation. So I would say, since I've been covering these issues, that the momentum has only increased, the politics around the issue have only, you know, picked up and evolved. But all these things taken together, you know, the politics have shifted, but the movement really has not, at least not at the federal level. So in theory, these would, of course, all be motivating factors for Congress to get moving, but they're really not in the big scheme of things, which is a big reason that we've seen states kind of picking up the pace and trying to move faster on these issues, which are obviously very pressing issues. And I think I'll kick it back to you.
Yeah, and it's so frustrating, I think, in terms of the stall at the federal level, because every time we do have one of these, as you mentioned, inflection points, we all say, and especially as a journalist, I've said so many times, like, will this be the moment? Like, this will spur government to act. And like, I've been guessing on when they're going to pass a federal law for the past, I don't know, and it's been going on for longer than this, but you know, for like 6 years, I've been like, I mean, in the next couple of years, something has to happen. This is wild. And then you see, you know, China passing a privacy law. And I don't think any of us I don't think it was an easy pill to swallow that a country like China was able to, who we don't think of as a very privacy forward country, is passing a privacy law for their own citizens, but the U.S. can't get it done. Having said that, there are some provisions in the China law that I think give people some pause, especially because the Beijing government will still have broad access to the data that is in question here. For those of you who aren't privacy buffs, Alex mentioned earlier the Privacy Shield framework. To take it back a little bit and just give you a brief history on that, we had the Safe Harbor Agreement, which allowed data transfers out of the EU into the US. That was struck down at the European level. Privacy Shield followed. It was supposed to be the Band-Aid. That was struck down, mainly based on the EU's concerns about US law enforcement access to data. There are provisions in US security law that allow national security authorities to access data broadly, even on innocent citizens, in an effort to catch criminals. That makes Europe very nervous. And so it's sort of difficult to see how we're gonna come to another agreement soon, given that the US isn't going to be able to change its national security policies anytime soon, certainly not as soon as the US is hoping they will. I wanted to touch on one other thing you said, Alex, before we turn to David, and that is that privacy is bipartisan. I wonder, do you have any thoughts on why that is? I mean, is it simply because all of us are citizens with data all over the internet that's been breached a million times over, and so it's a little bit personal to us?
Yeah, I do. I think that, you know, I think that everybody, because everybody's on technology now and everybody has both positive reactions and negative reactions to technology, it's sort of like the one connector. I think everybody can feel really happy that they can order something and have it be on their doorstep the next day. That's great. I also think everybody can collectively understand what it means to feel kind of creeped out when you're getting targeted with things that are, that, you know, hit way too close to home or sort of seeming to read your mind, even if that's not technically possible. I think that it's something that everybody can relate to. And I think that unlike some of the other tech policy issues that we've been covering, like content moderation, antitrust, privacy is something that I think, I think that there's desire for change on those fronts as well. But I think that the desire for change on those fronts, people are just coming at them from different directions, where I think that everybody can kind of find more common ground on privacy. And for what it's worth, there have been privacy talks, as you mentioned, Angelique, in the process for so long, and there's already a lot of the more divisive sticking points, not all of them have been worked out. Obviously, like there's a couple of issues that are still holding up talks, and there's a lot of partisan disagreement on those final sticking points. But like Democrats and Republicans are like 80% of the way there on agreeing on what should move forward with privacy legislation at the congressional level.
Angela, can I jump in there on the bipartisan?
Please do.
Issue. So it's fascinating, right? Because if you look at it on the state level, right, Colorado passes legislation this year with bipartisan sponsors in both the House and the Senate, right? They lined up bipartisan sponsors around it. Oklahoma, Colin Waelke was pushing that bill, a Democrat, but he had a Republican co-sponsor in the House, right? And then you've got Washington with the Washington Privacy Act, which 3 years in a row can't get across the finish line, a number of reasons, but like prior right of action is one of the reasons. A full-on Democrat state, right? It's all Democrats there, and they can't agree on privacy legislation. They control all three branches. Juxtapose that against Florida, where McFarland runs the legislation in Florida, and it's all Republicans, right? House and the Senate and the governor are all controlled by Republicans. And that bill fails on a number of issues, but primarily prior right of action. McFarland told me in a podcast that they had resolved that issue, right? So you actually see, to Alex's point, you see broad bipartisan support for these bills. And so we did a podcast series over the summer where we started interviewing all these state lawmakers who are pushing this legislation. I would say, tell me about that, right? Tell me about how people see it. And there are points about prior rights of action and those types of things that are divisive. But by and large, to Alex's point, everybody gets it, right? Everybody gets that, like, when you're sitting here on your phone, you don't want to be tracked all over the internet. And at its heart, that's what we're talking about. And I think Republicans got more concerned about this issue with the election and with all these deplatforming issues surrounding the election. And they view it a little bit different than maybe the Democrats do, but they reach the same endpoint, right? For them, it's like, let's punish the platforms and social media for what we thought were grievances against us, right? And there's an anger there. And the Democrats, though, come about it with, we want to control the data, right? And this is, obviously I'm making this very, very generalized here, right? But the point is, like, there's different motivations. And when I talk with these lawmakers, there's different motivations that get them to the same end game, which is they want it to happen. On a federal level, it hasn't happened. It's happening on the state level, and it's going to happen this year. It's all the drum beats are in place when you talk about it more, for seeing two or three more states jump in this year with legislation.
Absolutely. So could you give us, just sort of characterize for us as someone who's been watching the space closely? And again, I was telling Alex and David when we were planning this that I was, I had my eye on David to try and get him on this webinar because I was seeing him tweet every time there was any movement in one of the state houses. And it seems like there was really a flurry of activity, especially when Washington was trying to pass, as you mentioned, David, Washington State tried to pass a privacy bill three times. And it looked like for a while they were going to follow California as the second state to get it done. Just hasn't happened. But we'll dig into the whys a little bit later. But can you characterize for us what you see in this shifting landscape?
Yeah, sure. And so, the story starts in 2018, right, with the California Consumer Privacy Act. And so you have, I imagine most people know the story, right? Allison McTaggart with the ballot measure. He's about to present that to the Secretary of State, and the law, the legislature steps in and says, what happens if we pass a bill and we negotiate the bill? So yes, California legislatively passes a bill with, you know, the gun at its head of the ballot measure, which is a much more onerous one, right? That's our tipping point. That is our tipping point, right? Because the argument always had been, you couldn't pass privacy legislation because it would be too onerous, right? So, you know, the fifth largest economy in the world, California, passes privacy legislation. The argument's gone. It's happening, right? There is no going back, right? And so what you saw is the first legislative cycle after that, the 2019 legislative cycle, you saw other states jump in. Nobody passed a law. Washington was the closest, as you know. And I spent a lot of my nights and weekends watching Washington legislative committee hearings and blogging about it.
And those things went so long. It would be, I would give up. I was like, uncle, I'm going out. This is ridiculous. Well,
yeah. And like, you know, everybody's jumping in and everybody's got their point of view. And you're just like, it's a Saturday night. And you're trying to like, you know, get through a hearing. And you're like, seriously, like, can we just sum it up, guys? Like, can we just like 30 seconds, right? Like, you don't like the bill, right? Like, they just call it a day, right?
Right.
And so Washington fails. And then we have the next legislative cycle, which is the 2020 legislative cycle. And COVID happens, right? And legislatures close down. And you saw that in Washington as well. They were actually like, if you go back, you can look at it. The COVID was starting, remember back in the day, it was really starting in the Pacific Northwest, right? So at the time when they're doing the hearings on the Washington Privacy Act in 2020, like all of those articles are all about like COVID and how it was like infiltrating the Pacific Northwest at that time, right? And they have a short session, they can't pass the legislation. The world explodes. We get back to 2021. 2021 is really the year that I think things start picking up. And we see 27 states propose CCPA-like privacy legislation. And so we're paying attention to a number of them. Washington, obviously, given that's tried it a couple of times before. And then out of nowhere, Virginia passes a bill, right? The Virginia Consumer Data Protection Act, which is the Washington bill, but they passed it in Virginia. They tinkered with it, but they passed it in Virginia, right? And nobody had, you know, on you know, you mentioned Twitterverse, right? On the Twitterverse, nobody had Virginia picked on our bingo, you know. Nobody had it picked, right? And all of a sudden, Virginia's passing. We're like, what just happened, right? And then we get a bunch of states who are holding hearings. It looks like things are good in Oklahoma, but Oklahoma gets held up. It passes one chamber, not the other. Washington Privacy Act passes one chamber, not the other. Fails on a Sunday night. Yes, it ruined the Sunday night. I don't know why the legislature closed on a Sunday night, but they did. And a lot of us are really pissed off because they didn't even like raise the bill. They just like ended the recording, right? They were just like, goodbye, blank screen, right? And we were like, what just happened, right? We wasted our Sunday night. And so like that, we get a bunch of states that are doing stuff. It looks like there's momentum, but everything fails. And at the very tail end of all of it, Colorado resurfaces. I thought the bill was dead. I'm in Denver. I'm embarrassed to say I thought that the bill was dead. It resurfaces and all of a sudden it's got speed and momentum behind it, right? And Colorado passes the bill. So as we sit here today, we've got three states, Virginia, California, and Colorado, that have bills, right? We have five states that are still in session. And so like Massachusetts, Ohio, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and New Jersey are still in session. There's supposed to be a hearing on the Massachusetts bill next month is what I'm hearing. And Ohio got pushed out to committee. So we might see some stuff happen there. But what this is really teeing up to right now is all these lawmakers are coming back in 2022, and they're already starting. I was on a working group in Connecticut yesterday. That bill is coming back. We know Florida's coming back. We know Washington Privacy is coming back because it can't not come back, right? We know Minnesota's happened. There's an informational hearing next week on Minnesota. So it's all pushing towards 2022 could be a year where we see a number of other states jump in. I'm not going to predict because I'm always wrong and I hate being wrong, but like in privacy law, you have to be willing to be wrong at least 70% of the time. You have to be willing to be wrong in privacy law. But you know, it really is teeing up to be 2022. Yeah.
Alex, I'm curious, as this is all happening at the state level, and maybe this isn't like a conversation you overheard or even a, you know, a statement from a senator or something, but like, do you have a sense that the federal government is watching this movement and feeling a sense of urgency and pressure?
Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone is watching it. I think members of Congress are watching it. Obviously, industry is watching it. But one really interesting argument I've heard, well, let me start by saying the argument that you often hear is, and the buzzword you often hear is patchwork, right? So like passing all these laws state by state, David mentioned there's, you know, more than two dozen of them that are kind of in, that are percolating right now, that the states passing all their own privacy regimes is going to create a patchwork, which is this idea that it'll be impossible, virtually impossible for consumers to understand. It'll create all this this confusion, and it'll harm innovation, and it'll create a compliance mess, especially a compliance mess for smaller companies that don't have all the resources that large companies have to keep up with all the different rules across state borders. So that's like the usual argument I hear. But I think another really interesting that I've been hearing, interesting argument I've been hearing recently is actually that like all of this stuff happening at the state level is not really going to move the needle in Congress until a private right of action is passed at the state level, which hasn't happened yet. So private right of action, for those who aren't familiar, right, it's this idea that individuals can sue companies for perceived privacy violations. And that has been, I think, one of the biggest barriers in state bills, but it's also been one of the biggest hangups in congressional privacy talks. And so the idea that so long as a state bill doesn't pass with a private right, that that Congress won't really be, you know, Congress won't really get moving and that companies won't really be as concerned, that's sort of what I've been hearing more recently. I think that there's this notion that businesses and that Congress would see a very broad private right as sort of this existential threat. And I had an interview a few months ago with someone who was saying that once a state passes a bill with a private right, that's when like the floodgates will open. That's when people will start becoming really nervous. That's when Congress will maybe feel a fire of some sort lit. But I think that for the most part, there's a lot of, I think it's very much become sort of a talking point, like states are doing this, something must be done. And I think that the idea that there's a patchwork, I've also heard that a patchwork doesn't actually exist yet. It's just sort of starting to emerge. And I think that that's really interesting. And actually just last week I was chatting with somebody who described it more as a layer cake than a patchwork, and sort of made this comparison, like that the idea of a patchwork is really just states have slightly different rules, but if everyone just adheres to what California's laws says, or, you know, the GDPR, then maybe we'll be fine from a compliance perspective. A layer cake would be when the state laws actually start contradicting each other, and that those are sort of two different things. I thought that was a really kind of interesting description that I thought helped see all this in a different way.
Yeah. And I, you know, we just recently created a chart comparing the laws that exist, the state laws that exist so far. And the sense I had when I was building it is like, yeah, sort of to your point, it doesn't seem like they're so far off from each other. David, can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, if you're complying with California's Consumer Privacy Act, for example, are you pretty close to compliant with the laws that have emerged since in Virginia and Colorado?
Yeah, I think the biggest difficulty, right, with these laws, Angelique, is the terminology, right? So CCPA, because it's California and it has to be California, right? It's got business and service provider, and now they're gonna, you know, invent some other definitions as well, right? And then if you look at the laws in like Colorado and Virginia, which will go into effect in 2023, they're GDPR terminology. It's controller, it's processor, right? And so part of it is a definitional issue, right? It's the same stuff, but we're using different terms, right? The ways in which these laws primarily differ, one would be a good example would be like sensitive data. So, and this is, to complete the circle on this, CCPA passes, and then they come back and they do another ballot measure, and we're going to have the CPRA or CIPRA in 2023, right? Which is really when the wheels kind of fall off in 2023 as far as like new obligations, right?
So if I just interrupt for a second for folks who are kind of just getting up to speed with these privacy laws, Alistair McTaggart, who we referenced earlier, a very rich real estate mogul, if you will, as he's referred to. He was responsible for getting the CCPA passed through the legislature with the threat of his ballot initiative. And then everyone, you know, industry sort of said, oh my God, this is wild. This is crazy. We've got to get our ducks in a row. And I'll never forget reporting out. I was actually working at my last gig and we were having a live event and McTaggart was speaking there and he dropped on stage that he was introducing the CPRA. And you could just sort of feel this collective, like, are you kidding me, man, from the crowd? Because it was like, we just got done giving you everything you asked for and now you want more. But he sort of came back to do what he hadn't finished with the California Privacy Rights Act, which, as David says, comes into effect in 2023. Sorry to interrupt. Please continue, David.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good background. And thanks for providing that. And like, so you see, you know, as we're building out compliance programs, like this sort of like deadline 2023, right? The world will end and all this type of stuff. We look at that and we're saying like, what are some of the distinctions? Sensitive data, right? So both have categories of sensitive data. In the Virginia, Colorado model, you need consent to collect sensitive data. In the CPRA model, which CCPA doesn't have sensitive data, but CPRA will, you're going to have, you can collect it, but you have to keep within a box of how you can use that sensitive data. And if you stray outside that box, you have to give people the right to limit you back into that box, right? So a different approach there. But some of these elements, right, are the same, like a privacy policy, right? You got to talk about what you use, how you collect it, all those types of things, right? Consistency there. And then there's consistency. They're going to want data processing agreements in place so that if you transfer data to third parties, they want you to, to go ahead and button that up with a contract. And we know that from GDPR anyway, right? So conceptually, these are the same. The big caveat there and the elephant in the room is the California Privacy Protection Agency, the data protection authority that's being set up by the CPRA, has to promulgate regulations on 22 topics. And the CCPA had regulations, but that was 7 topics. Now the CPRA is going to have 22 topics. And so you tell people, you're like, well, how do these differ? And I say, well, I'll tell you after I get the regulations, because that's Pandora's box, right? I mean, there can be a lot done in there. And we saw that with the CCPA, where they decided that user-enabled privacy control signals were going to be an opt-out sales, the Attorney General's office did. So there's a big to be determined, but they're lining up. And back to one point Alex made as well about this patchwork, right? It's not a patchwork until there's more than 3, right, as part of the issue, right, that we're up against. And if you look at it, right, most states that are looking seriously at legislation, it kind of tracks one another, right, to your point of this. It tracks the Washington, Virginia, Colorado model, or it tracks the CCPA model, right? The wrinkle is, if you had a state do something like, and I think we can live with those two. I think we can live with those two and figure it out. And more people, I think, are inclined to do the Colorado, Virginia model, Washington model anyway. The problem is what if we got a bill that was different? And for example, the ACLU ran a bill last year in Washington, and the ACLU is running a bill in Massachusetts right now as well. Much more different bill, right? That would be, create a real patchwork, a real difference there. And then the Uniform Law Commission also published what it views as its version of a privacy bill, state privacy bill, much different as well than what we see in Colorado, Virginia.
Can you tell us a little bit what you mean when you say it's much different? What they have some crazy provision in there?
Well, I think, you know, let me talk about the ACLU bill, because I think that's even starker. Well, I mean, like, Uniform Law Commission, to my recollection, doesn't have a right to be forgotten in there, a right to deletion, okay, right? One of the fundamental things that we have in GDPR and all these other privacy laws, so a big difference there. The ACLU bill is like a grab bag of all things that privacy advocates would want. So they actually like throw BIP in there, the Illinois Biometric Information Privacy Act with a prior right of action. Hey, let's throw that in there as well, right? And so like that would create, to Alex's point, like the more you talk about litigating, right? And as a lawyer who tries to drive people into compliance here, nothing concerns me more than having a prior right of action where somebody gets to go through a privacy policy line by line. And God forbid, you know, in my really, you know, dedicated effort to get it right, if I got a word off or I missed a thing and that turns into a class action lawsuit, like, that's a problem.
You're tired.
That's, yeah, then I'm flipping to the other side and I'm the guy filing the lawsuits, because you're going to give up, right? So that's, So anyway, so, you know, but those are sort of the differences here. And then, you know, we're seeing things as well on right to cure. So there's a lot of discussion around right to cure, whether people should have the right to cure violations. It's a really hot topic for discussion. And
what does that, what does that mean, David, the right to cure?
Yeah. So the CCPA, which is the only law in effect right now, has a right to cure. So the Attorney General's office has to notify you, hey, company, you screwed it all up, right? You got 30 days to fix it. You say, oh, well, I'm sorry, right? I had no idea I screwed this up, right? And I will go about fixing it, right? And that allows you to cure your violation. That goes away in 2023 when the CPRA comes into effect in California. There will be no more right to cure. In Colorado, which is another good example, Colorado has a right to cure in its bill that will go into effect in 2023, but that's going to sunset. And so it's only going to stick around for, I think, 2 years, a year and a half-ish. I have to look back. And then, so the idea there is going to be, well, as companies are coming into compliance with this, you know, we want to encourage compliance. And so we don't want to play a gotcha game, right? So, but you should have it figured out within a couple of years. We were on it, like I mentioned before, we were on a working group meeting yesterday in Connecticut about its bill. And the Attorney General's office in Connecticut was on there and we were talking about this. And they said, well, we enforce all these bills in consumer protection. They don't have right to cure. So why would you get a right to cure in a privacy bill? It makes no sense, right? It's a fair point, right? It's a fair point. But by that same token, right, we're talking about something that's pretty complicated. And, you know, I favor a right to cure because it's pretty stinking complicated, right? But in that same vein, like we see distinctions there about how companies are going to roll those issues out, right? And that actually affects a point made yesterday. It affects the ability for states to join together and do multi-state investigations. Because if I can cure it in state A, but I can't cure it in state B, then only state B can come after me, right? And I've cured it in state A. It's actually really kind of fascinating when you go on a state level as opposed to federal.
Yeah, and I would think, I mean, similar when we hear about some of these sticking points like private right of action, if you're going to throw at them a right to cure, that industry can swallow that pill a little easier when you're trying to get something passed, right? Like, we're not going to just whack you if you violate the law. We're not going to charge you, you know, fine you thousands of dollars. We're going to give you the chance to fix it. If I'm a company and I'm lobbying against a bill and someone says, well, listen, we're going to be reasonable, I'm a little more amenable to passing that bill, right?
Well, yeah, right. Yeah, for sure, right. And I mean, these are the give and takes, right? That we're seeing right now, and very much so. When you look at this legislation, you talk to people, the prior right of action gets matched up with the right to cure. These are sort of like, okay, well, if I give on one, then you give me on the other one, type of thing, right? Because enforcement, because as I think Joe Jerome on Twitter said one time, like it's just a paper tiger, right? If like I can pass the biggest stack of privacy stuff out there and tell you, you know, you got to do 20,000 things, but if there's not an enforcement mechanism there that scares you, yeah, right? It's just words on paper. And so I think that's a big piece of the puzzle for privacy advocates, is making sure that we have bills that are actually enforceable. And you can look at, you know, you can look at Europe. In the first 2 years of GDPR, it was all about, we're not enforcing it, right? And now, well, it's like, I can't believe they're enforcing this, right? I mean, like, it's flipped because these investigations start. So anyway, it's making all these pieces kind of come together. Now, I'll suggest this as well and kind of throw a concept out there, right? What's happening in this country may be exactly the way the framers intended it to happen in this country, right? Is that we do things on the state level first and we figure it out there, and then we can roll it up on the federal level, right? And because what works, all these issues we're talking about, whether we should have a right to cure, whether we should have the right to ask the enforcer, you know, hey, does this work? Does this not work? These things, we're guessing. Let's just be honest. We're guessing, right? We have one state with a year and a half of experience doing this, right? And like, we're guessing about how things are going to work. And so maybe it's not a bad idea for the longevity of this country and data privacy if we let the states flesh this out for a little bit, because we can break it on the state level and put it back together again a heck of a lot easier. Like, go look at HIPAA and go look at like the year it was passed, right? Like, these
David, what did I tell you about acronyms?
What's that? Yeah, well, no, that was, you know, you said on the On the Twitter chat,
you're right. I know, but I'm the acronym police. Anyways, HIPAA is a health information privacy law.
Yeah, and I was probably well past the point of my talk anyway, so it's not a bad idea for you to cut me off, right, and get me back on track.
But, that's okay.
You know, it's one of these other concepts, though, right? Like all these things that we talk about what works, what doesn't work, and all those types of things. It may be beneficial to all of us if we just have trial and error on the state level and figure it out.
Can I add one thing to that, Anjali?
Please do.
So even just last week, I was I interviewed one of the sponsors of Virginia's privacy law, and it really seems like the more I'm talking, and I've also spoken to the sponsor of Washington's privacy law, it really seems like the attitude at the state level is perfect is the enemy of good. And I think that like if you ran that by members of Congress, some would agree with that. I think many would not agree with that. I think the perspective in Congress is often, we don't want to pass anything until we can get it right and make sure it's strong. And there's a perception from Congress that because, for example, private right hasn't passed in any of the state laws, there's a perception from Congress that what the states are doing, that the state laws are actually pretty weak. And so in Congress, you've got this like clash of people who are like, no, we should just get something foundational on the books. Perfect is the enemy of good. And then you have other members of Congress that totally disagree with that and say, we should wait until we can get it right and we can make it as strong as we want to make it. The problem with that is, of course, that the longer the can is kicked down the road, there's always going to be, every time there's this, you know, an inflection point, I was mentioning all these different inflection points. Every time there's an inflection point, every time we go into another session, every time we go into a new administration, there are going to be new voices at the table. There's going to be new variables to consider. Business practices at the companies that would be affected by a privacy law are going to be like evolving because technology is moving so quickly. And so I think this perfect is the enemy of good thing that we're seeing at the state level. I think that's really what is driving kind of this domino effect across these, you know, more than 27 states that are trying to put their own laws on the books. I think that the Virginia sponsor who I spoke to last week said, we're not trying to boil the ocean here. And I kind of liked that. And it's really just this idea that like there needs to be, that something is better than nothing when it comes to privacy. And then to David's point, that the idea is, you know, to figure out what works and what doesn't, and then to build off of that.
Yeah, maybe I can pick up from there. I mean, Alex is dead right. I mean, like you look at the two states that have passed it voluntarily. I mean, California put it aside, right? Because California was ballot measure, pass it, or I'm going to put the ballot measure on. And who votes against privacy, right? I mean, like who votes against privacy? So Virginia, Marsden, they formed a working group, right? And they said, fine, we'll go back to it and we'll kind of tinker with it. And at the beginning of the working group, he said, this is the senator from Virginia. He said at the beginning of the working group, he said, exactly how what Alex just said. He said others have tried and they've set the bar too high, right? We just wanted to pass something. We'll pass something. We'll provide rights that don't exist to Virginia residents, and then we'll come back and we'll tinker with it, right? In Colorado, if you look there, the governor Polis signs the Colorado Privacy Act and he issues a signing statement. In the signing statement, he says, well, in the haste to pass this bill, there's issues that still need to be resolved, yada, yada, yada. They're going to come back next year. They're going to work on it again, right? You can do that on the state level. You could do it on a federal level. None of us think that's going to happen, right? We all live in this country, right? But like on the state level, lawmakers can come back and tinker on things. And every year they can do a little tinkering here, a little tinkering there on a very much more, like on these working group committee hearings that we get onto. There's lots of people there and they hear lots of voices and those types of things. So again, it's we're going to go about it in a different way in this country than they do obviously in other countries. And it's going to take a little bit longer to get across the finish line, I think, but I think maybe it just kind of works the way it's supposed to.
Let's talk a little bit about, well, actually I want to address, we have a question from someone that I know I said I wasn't going to take it until the end, but we're kind of toying around preemption here, right? So the question is, what happens when states push the bar too high and then a federal law, in order for it to apply nationwide, has difficulty instantiating certain aspects of state laws? So maybe we can just talk about, I think that's probably for David, maybe Alex, correct me if I'm wrong, but let's talk a little bit about preemption and how that sort of could impact the landscape.
Yeah, so as you know, for preemption, right? So the federal government passes a law on a topic, states pass a law on a topic, who wins? The federal government, right? Like every time. One hundred times out of 100. That's preemption. So the concept is, you know, would states be able to go and set a higher bar? So for example, like the federal law, the hypothetical federal law we're talking about, right, passes, right? And it says you can collect data, right, any data. And say you've got Colorado out there that says we need consent for sensitive data, right? There you need to figure out, and it would need to be addressed in the law itself, whether the law would allow states to go further and set the bar higher, right? And so we have that. We have that in the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, where states can, you know, there's, you get your bank, you get once a year, or now it's electronically, you get a statement from a bank that says this is how we use your information. You can opt out, right? Well, California's gone further with the California Financial Information Privacy Act, has more restrictive rules, right? So we have that model in place already in privacy legislation. It just tends to be that you can't have a one-to-one conflict, right? You can go and be more restrictive, you just can't have a one-to-one conflict.
Alex, go ahead.
Oh, no, I would also just jump in to say that I know that I mentioned that private right of action is one of the biggest sticking points at the federal level. There's pretty much two huge ones. That's one. And then the other one is preemption. And so I think one of the most interesting things I've seen about the preemption debate in Congress is that it's not just Democrats disagreeing with Republicans, where, you know, Democrats want federal preemption, or sorry, Republicans and Democrats disagree about whether the federal law should preempt state laws or vice versa. You actually have Democrats who are, you know, people in the same party who are disagreeing over whether state law should preempt federal law or vice versa. And so I think that when we talk about how we're 80% of the way there to passing, you know, a national privacy framework, that like the rest of the 20% is going to take us probably a very long time. And I just wanted to call out that there's, you know, preemption, there's, you know, tensions even in intra-party around how it should be handled moving forward.
Alex, I wanted to ask you a little bit too. I mean, there's this whole other topic that we haven't really touched on yet, but it's part of the conversation, which is self-regulation, right? There's all of these frameworks that say, you know, if you adhere to this framework, then you are safe from X, Y, and Z. Is self-regulation a workable model in this age of like big tech, grab all the data you can, you know, a lot of big tech seeming to be either sort of not understanding what's harmful about their practices, or choosing, you know, ignorance is bliss, choosing not to understand that. Can we trust self-regulation with something like privacy?
I think self-regulation is one of the most interesting parts of this entire debate, because for Congress, as we've talked about, like for Congress, it could take decades to pass a privacy law. For states, it could take years. For tech companies, if they wanted to make a change, you know, a privacy-related change, it could take them like a few days or maybe even a few hours, depending on what the company is. So I always, you know, I always like to pose the question to lawmakers or people I'm interviewing, how can we accomplish more on privacy, by companies making privacy changes or by lawmakers at the federal or state level passing privacy laws? It was really interesting, an interview I did recently with Senator Chris Coons. He's the chair of the Senate Judiciary Privacy Subcommittee, subcommittee focused on like technology and privacy issues. He pointed out how much success he had had alone just ratcheting up public pressure through public hearings and writing letters to the executives of these companies. And that like that was prompting them to, you know, change their practices faster than a law, which is, you know, several years out or potentially more than that. But I think a lot of lawmakers, including him, would also argue that like there are definitely limits to how much can be accomplished that way. And that just because a company says that they're, you know, doing this privacy thing or unveiling this privacy feature, that there are still obviously accountability questions, questions about like, how do we know that they're doing what they say they are doing, or not sharing what they say they're not sharing, not using the data, monetizing it, collecting it if they say they're not. And I think also another really interesting thing, as all the self-regulation is happening, and Apple especially has been coming out with all these different privacy features that I'm sure many of you are aware of, that companies are increasingly saying, we really want to be regulated. And pointing, of course, to the state laws that are proliferating. Some people question, I think some critics like question why the tech companies are actually calling for regulation. And I think that there's a lot of cynics and skeptics out there who are saying they're just asking for regulation so they can figure out, once it's on the books, they can figure out ways to work around it. There's other people that are, you know, I think probably less skeptical than that. But I think understanding all of these sort of, all of these different sides of the coin is I think all these different perspectives are key to understanding how much can be accomplished with, you know, companies regulating themselves and having their own kind of privacy agendas versus like where they, you know, where they bump up on against the limits on that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting too. I mean, I tend to be a pessimist in life. I'm not proud of it, but I am. And, you know, we see stories depending on which safe harbor framework we're talking about. And I don't say safe harbor in terms of the data transfer agreement, but these sort of safe harbor frameworks, for example, there are children's privacy safe harbor frameworks, which we've seen like a number of cases filed by the Federal Trade Commission against these companies who are self-certifying to comply with certain rules regarding children's privacy. Turns out like they weren't doing what they said they were, but they were posting their little like, we're compliant with this children's privacy safe harbor, so you can trust us and hope in maybe gaining customers that way. That said, there are thousands of companies engaged in various safe harbor frameworks that are doing the right thing. So, you know, I think you see the headlines and you kind of get a bad taste in your mouth. That's not to say that self-regulation doesn't work in all cases, you know. Before we ask for final questions from folks, I want to give some sort of takeaway operational advice. So, David, can you just touch on for us, you know, what would you say, what right now in the US is the strictest state law to comply with? And would you say for people listening, focus on that, focus your efforts there, and then sort of fill in the blanks? Or what would your advice to folks be who are just getting started?
Yeah, so right now, the answer is easy, right? Because we only have one. right now.
Oh, okay. No. Wait, hold on. Let me.
So I've actually got that question right. I'd like to just mark down. I've got that question
okay.
right.
Okay. California and Virginia. California's two laws, and then Virginia and Colorado. Let's pretend they're all active right now.
Okay. Yeah. So, and just for clarity, in case anybody, I imagine we have a lot of sophisticated listeners, and you know, the Virginia, Colorado, and the second version of the California law will be 2023, right? So right now we're sitting here in one. So which one's the strictest right now? It depends, yeah. Right? I mean, it depends. You know, I would argue I've viewed Colorado and Virginia sort of over here. I don't, you know, Virginia is sort of not it's not Virginia, right? I view Colorado and California as complementary pieces, right? So for example, you know, the sensitive data thing, which I pointed out earlier, right? I mean, I would argue Colorado, if you need consent to collect sensitive data, I'd argue that that is more restrictive than the limit, you know, the limit me back down to my use of sensitive data. Now, that said, the definition of sensitive data in California is broader. And email contents, geographic location, those types of things, right? So it's broader, so they complement each other, right? Also, you know, the global privacy control signal we haven't talked about quite yet is discretionary. It actually is discretionary in the CPRA. It actually says, or use a global privacy control signal. Now, the AG's office has come out now and said it's mandatory, right? They've used their rulemaking authority, but if you look at the text, it says or. It says what it says. In Colorado, it's going to be mandatory. You're going to have to recognize that, right? So some complementary pieces. So I would say, like, if you're coming up with a program now, and we do with clients, now we're trying to think about these things, we're coming up with ways to sort of like blend these two together, because in some places it's going to be more restrictive than not. And again, with a huge caveat of saying the regulations are coming, and you know, they've, by this time next year, they will be here, and I'm already dreading, right? I just already am dreading 22 topics and, you know, five, I mean, there was 500 pages of final statement of reasons with the CCPA regulations. And this is three times as many regulations. So,
right. Yeah. And the regulations, right. So I'm a non-lawyer, and I want to know, so the regulations that follow a law are really the, here's what we mean and here's what you do. Right.
Yeah. I think probably, yeah, it's a great way of thinking about it. And I, sometimes I've expressed it to clients as like, it's operationalizing the law. right? So like the law says you have to provide for the right to deletion. Okay, what does that mean, right? Like, how do I get that across the finish line? An email address, a web form, you know, how do I the statute says you have to verify somebody's identity. Well, how do I do that, right? I mean, like, do I need to get, you know, 6 forms of identification? Am I like, is this like issuing a passport, or is this just like, you know, sign this document type stuff, right? So like they're trying to operationalize these things. You know, sometimes they create more ambiguity than they solve, unfortunately. And you are, you know, it's probably worth noting too, because I've talked a lot about the California regulations. Colorado allows regulations, allows the Attorney General's office to promulgate regulations. There's a general statement there, right? They have to promulgate a regulation on a user enabled, on the technical specifications for the global opt-out. So what is that? You know, rather than going to every single website and opting out of the sale, you would use the global privacy control signal, and that would send a signal to every website. So you do it once and it takes care of it across the board. But you need, you know, the AG's office in Colorado is going to have to issue technical specifications on that, as is the California Attorney General's office. But Colorado has a one sentence in there that says, you know, the AG can promulgate regulations on other topics. So it's possible. We don't know. They actually have a job opening right now to bring on somebody into the AG's office to help with those regulations, right? So in theory, Wiser could be gearing up to issue regulations on a number of topics.
Alex, do you, if you don't know about the global privacy control, definitely look into it. As David mentioned, the California AG, which enforces California's privacy law for now. It will soon be the California Privacy Protection Agency, but the AG has said you must respect global privacy control signals. And so it's an important, we've got stuff about it on our website. You can find it everywhere. But as he said, it's a standard that'll allow you to opt out of data collection across websites. You only have to do it once, not at any individual one. Alex, I wanted to ask you our 2 more questions, and then I've got a question from the audience. Are any of the models that we see out there now, do you think that the US government could maybe just sort of like copy and paste, and it could potentially make some headway as a federal standard, or do you think that we're gonna have to completely start from scratch?
I think probably somewhere in the middle. As we've talked about, there's certain things that that are really, the sticking points that are at the federal level have also been sticking points at the state level. And I think that private right, which is not really, I mean, there have been sort of like flimsy alternatives kind of to private right that have appeared at the state level. But like, I think at the federal level, they're really, at least Democrats are pushing really hard for a private right to exist. And so I think that there could be, you know, when Democrats and Republicans are trying to figure out how to split the difference or meet in the middle, or maybe it's not even meeting in the middle, but it's however they plan to compromise, perhaps we could see one of the sort of alternatives to private right that has appeared at the state level, you know, find its way into the federal bill. But I also think that there are other things that have increasingly become a priority for members of Congress in their legislation that are really also not, not in many of the state level bills. I know that over the last like roughly year and a half, civil rights have become a much bigger part of the privacy debate. And although there are, you know, certain privacy adjacent privacy related bills that have passed at the state level, I think Washington has on facial recognition. I think that civil rights have not been as much of a focus generally at the state level as much as it is now at the federal level. By civil rights being incorporated into the bills, I mean like addressing algorithmic discrimination or bias in artificial intelligence. So it's, you know, the idea that you know, AI might discriminate against marginalized communities and the determinations that it makes, or perhaps you might have data collected about you. And then if you decide that you don't want to share your sensitive personal data, maybe you could be targeted with higher prices or worse off service. Those are the sorts of things that I mean when I say like AI discrimination or algorithmic bias, those sorts of things. So I think like that also, hasn't been as big of a focus at the state level. I think will increasingly be like a bigger part of the discussion at the federal level. So that's like, I guess my long roundabout way of saying that I think, you know, yes, there will be some elements of what's happening at the state level that appears in a federal bill. But again, I more see this being less of a bottom-up process and more of Congress saying, we don't want to. It was actually Amy Klobuchar said to me the other week, I think I pulled the quote. She said, let's not sell out on privacy with whatever language is agreed to at the state level. And so I think it's really this idea that they want to make sure that, they're not, settling for anything weaker than they've been pushing for all along.
Alex, I want to play a really quick game with you. And because you're not a lawyer, I think it might work. Let's just see. I don't think that a private right is ever going to make it into a federal bill. I think the Republicans are going to protect their, the lobbyists are going to take over and they're going to protect their interests and it's not going to make it in. So I'm asking you yes or no. And I know what David would say, it depends because he's a lawyer, but do you think that a private right of action could make it into a federal bill? Yes or no?
I think some middle
lawyer. Oh, you're a lawyer in journalist clothing. Alex.
Some middle. I think it'll be some. They're gonna have to split the difference somehow. I have no idea how that will be. And I don't think anyone has come to a conclusion about what exactly that'll look like yet.
Fair enough. David, in 30 seconds or less, which states should we be watching next for movement?
Yeah, well, I think you'll see movement in Ohio before year end. I think they're very proud of their bill there. There's been a lot of talk of it, so I think you'll see movement in Ohio. I don't suspect the bill will pass this year, but I think you'll see movement there. Oklahoma already pre-filed a bill for the next legislative session. Colin Waukee did, and I hear Massachusetts is going to have a hearing on its proposals in October. I understand that's going to happen. Joe Duvall was telling me that from IAPP. So I think those are the states, but I think the real game next year is going to be Florida coming back in. I mean, it's a big state. It's a big state. It's Republican, and they were hot to trot on the prior right of action. And I think I was told by one of the reps that they will not pass it unless there's a prior right of action. And as everybody's been saying, that's the fourth wall, right, of privacy law.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. Okay. Question from the audience, and then we have to wrap. I'm going to go to Alex for this one, and David, feel free to follow up if you wish. Where do you see enforcement coming from if we were to get a federal privacy law? Right now, of course, the FTC is sort of the de facto cop on the beat. There's been talk that the FTC can't handle, the caseload that it would incur if we were to pass a federal law. It's already understaffed, underbudgeted. What do you think? Would it be the FTC or we'd create another agency, Alex?
So I think that the idea that another agency will be created, I think that proposal has come up more and more recently, especially because, as you said, Angelique, the FTC is so under-resourced and understaffed and spread thin. But I see that really as a pie in the sky. I don't know that it's achievable in the near term, really, or in the long term. I think Republicans are very opposed to it. On the FTC point, we know that just in the last week or so, there has been a proposal from House Democrats to triple the FTC's annual budget, to give them a ton more money to be able to stand up privacy enforcement and create a privacy bureau. I think that is really interesting. I think that there's obviously also a lot of pushback from Republicans on that, saying that, if there's not a clear approach to what this privacy bureau would look like and those details haven't been hashed out, we can't do this. But I also want to just flag that yesterday, a group of Democratic senators called on the FTC to start a privacy rulemaking. And so I think that there are no clear answers about, who will, there are no clear answers about like what exactly will come next. But I do think that things are finally, now that we're 9 months or 10 months into the new Congress, I think things are finally starting to move. And I think we'll have a little bit more clarity in the near future about, what the FTC's role will be, either a bigger role than it currently has or not.
And Alex, you mentioned before we started that there's actually been a call for a federal privacy legislation hearing in the next couple of weeks.
Yes, I just found out right before I jumped on that there is expected to be a privacy hearing on the comprehensive national law next week. I haven't even reported it yet, so I don't want to say what the details are because I'm still double checking on a few things. But I do think that for all of the talk about how they were supposed to get on this early in the Biden administration, and now we're 10 months in and they haven't done anything, for all that talk, I do think that there is going to be a little bit of movement in the next week, or if at the very least, kind of in the last stretch of the year.
David, we're out of time, but 30 seconds. Anything you need to add that you haven't?
Yeah, no, I love the idea of the secret privacy hearing, just in general, right? And that's just kind of fun. And on the FTC thing, you know, what one way you could leverage it as well is you could give authority to state attorneys general to regulate to enforce that space as well. So it wouldn't just have to be one government agency. It could be you know, what's the right word for it? Shared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, well, we will bring you more as we know it. Make sure you follow Alex on Twitter for her excellent privacy reporting, and David as well. He will bring you all, he's watching the hearings. He's gonna tell you what's happening as it happens. Thank you all so much for being here with us this afternoon. Have a great rest of your day. Thanks to our panelists. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.